Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, Hour 3.
Greetings and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, good news and bad news and, well, all sorts of news related to the border situation. The number of people showing up at the border since Title 42 expired has declined. We're not seeing the wave of people we thought. Part of that is because a federal judge in Florida blocked the Biden administration from allowing people into the country if they were going to let them roam free. So we didn't get as many people, not because they're there, but because the border agents were forced to enforce rules that they otherwise wouldn't have to have been enforced. But it is good that there are less. The problem here is that we still got a crisis at the border, and we still have children in charge. Here, for example, this is some of the conversation over the weekend on the Sunday shows with Mayorkas.
Do you have numbers? I mean, how many have been released without a mandated court date?
So we released a number because of the surge that we experienced before Title 42 came to an end. Now, with the 50% drop in the number of encounters at our southern border, we are executing our consequence regime exactly as planned.
A little more.
What are the numbers? 5,000?
So we have seen, I think, approximately 6,300 on Friday and about 4,200 yesterday by the United States Border Patrol. And we saw over 10,000 before the end of Title 42 earlier last week.
Why do you think that is?
Because we have communicated very clearly a vitally important message to the individuals who are thinking of arriving at our southern border. There is a lawful, safe and orderly way to arrive in the United States that is through the pathways that President Biden has expanded in an unprecedented way. And then there's a consequence if one does not use those lawful pathways. And that consequence is removal from the United States, a deportation, and encountering a five-year ban on reentry and possible criminal prosecution.
Right, that they're not really enforcing. This is Congressman Mark Green.
Here with me now with his view is the Homeland Security House Chairman Mark Green of Tennessee. You just heard the secretary say that the number of border crossings has been cut in half since Title 42 expired. That unequivocally is good news, right?
Well, Dana, first, thanks for having me on the show and happy Mother's Day. What the secretary failed to say is that this week has seen more crossings than any week in our history. Yes, there was some anticipation, and so people started coming across at higher numbers, in fact, record-breaking numbers at the first part of the week. But in the latter part of the week, a judge ruled that they can't do their plan of just releasing without a court date, which Secretary Mayorkas has said on the news was a bad idea. But that court ruling said he can't do that. The drug cartels have responded, and the numbers have fallen off for a couple of days. But he admitted just moments ago that they can't predict the peak. CBP said 40% increase is expected with Title 42 gone. That's another 9 million people in 2 years. I mean, they've already let 5.04 million encounters and 1.5 million gotaways as they've tried to manage border security and not secure our border. So, I disagree with the secretary.
Now, that was Congressman Green putting those numbers in perspective. Jay Johnson was Barack Obama's Secretary of Homeland Security. Back in 2009, he was on NBC roundtable discussion with Chuck Todd talking about the border numbers. Remember, Mayorkas said 6,300 came across just on Friday. Listen to Jay Johnson from back in 2019. The situation hadn't gotten any better.
My staff will tell you if it was under 1,000 apprehensions the day before, that was a relatively good number. And if it was above 1,000, it was a relatively bad number, and I was going to be in a bad mood the whole day. On Tuesday, there were 4,000 apprehensions. I know that 1,000 overwhelms the system. I cannot begin to imagine what 4,000 a day looks like. So we are truly in a crisis.
That was 2019 with Trump in charge, 4,000. We had 6,300 come across on Friday alone. more than 10,000 a day on average last week when you add in Monday through Friday. And then from multiple Customs Border Patrol sources, Bill Malugan at Fox notes Border Patrol agents in San Diego arrested an Afghan national on the FBI's terror watch list after he crossed illegally with a group of migrants near Otay Mesa, California on Wednesday. The FBI confirmed the match and is leading the investigation. He's reached out, Bill Malugan has, to CBP for comment. They tell me they'll get back. Daryl Issa, the congressman for the area, tells Bill Malugan his office has confirmed the arrest with their contacts and released the following statement. Biden's open borders aren't just a gateway to 5 million illegals, record human and child trafficking, and the deadliest drug crisis in our history. Biden's reckless policy is also an open invitation to even the most wanted terrorists in the world to come to America. They know they'll never have to leave. The nation knows what's going on, and this president has only begun to be held accountable for what he's done. Now, what's notable here are the number of gotaways are estimated at 50,000. When you turn on the news this evening, I bet outside of Fox, you're probably not going to hear this story. It is now confirmed by Customs and Border Patrol that an Afghan national, that is someone from Afghanistan, who is on the FBI's terror watch list, was caught crossing the border in the San Diego area. Your reaction can be, this is great. They caught someone on the terror list crossing the border. But they're averaging 50,000 gotaways a month. That is, 50,000 people a month are not caught and come into this country, are not caught, and are wandering here now. If you caught one Afghan national on the terror watch list, how many are roaming the country who haven't been caught? The gotaways. This is a national security issue. The Biden administration can say we have a secure border. Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, says we have a secure border. But when asked to define what a secure border is, he never actually defines what a secure border is. He hems and he haws. They're coming into this country. Terrorists are coming into this country from Mexico. They fly to Mexico City. And then unlike the illegal immigrants in desperate straits who walk up Central America, I mean, literally spend months walking, a lot of these people, they fly into Mexico City. And then they hire drivers to take them to the border. And then they hire coyotes to help them cross the border. You've got fentanyl streaming across the border. You've got human trafficking victims, a lot of children who are coming into this country who are going to be used as either slave labor or sex victims. Now you got a terrorist, or at least on the terror watch list, who's caught in San Diego. And what's so galling here is notice most of the mainstream media outlets, they don't talk about the fentanyl crisis. They don't talk about the massive amount of drugs coming across the border. They don't talk about it. They ignore it. They don't want to whip people's sensibilities up. They don't want to get people's anger up. They want to get your anger up about all sorts of other stuff, but not about that. Not about the fentanyl crossing the border. And they don't want to talk about an Afghan national on the terror watch list who's coming to this country. Bill Malugan is not some arbitrary right-wing hit job reporter on Fox News. He's a respected, award-winning reporter. The left tried to disqualify him by saying he looks too good. Not making that up. They attacked Bill Malugan for saying in college he was a model for Abercrombie and Fitch. And that therefore you can't really trust the guy because he's just one of those pretty boys who gets on TV with no substance there. He's actually got a lot of substance. He's actually done a really good job covering the border. He's made a whole lot of news. And the Biden administration is wholly dismissive. We have a national security issue on our border. And with this border issue, the Biden administration wants to focus on, well, we got less numbers here. They expected a surge. They expected more than 10,000. That's what they were seeing. Illegal crossings in Texas have fallen off a cliff in the last 48 hours since Title 42's expiration. After a peak of 3,300 on May 8th in the Rio Grande Valley earlier this week, under 500 in the Rio Grande Valley in the last 24 hours, El Paso saw a big drop. There's more enforcement from Mexico. The state of Texas itself has taken to blocking entry. And migrants have gone to ports of entry. That's good. We should applaud this. Less than 500 encounters in the last 24 hours in the Rio Grande Valley yesterday, after 3,300 on Monday. That's a really good story. That's a great story. That's good news. But why is it happening? Mayorkas wants to take credit for it. He wants the Biden administration to take credit for it. He says the Biden administration has been giving these migrants cell phone apps. I'm sure they have fully charged cell phones with access to the internet while they're roaming the desert. That's what he says, though. He says we've given them an app. They can put it on their phone and they can go through the app and go through the process there. That's why they're not coming. Is it that, or is it that the state of Texas itself, its National Guard, is blocking the border? Is it that, or is it that a federal judge in Florida has ordered the Biden administration's Customs and Border Patrol to stop people from coming across the border and not allowing them to be released into this country? It has nothing to do with the Biden administration. It has to do with Texas National Guard, and it has to do with the Border Patrol being ordered by a court to stop releasing people into the country, but to in fact detain them. The Biden administration is blessed by the actions of others. Had it been left to its own devices, we would still have a problem. Yes, it is good news. We have less than 500 people yesterday. But it's still 500 too many. And a wave is still approaching the border. There's a massive wave of people still headed this way. I keep having friends tell me they realized I was right. Every time you wash sheets from Boll & Branch, they get softer and softer. They're the most luxurious sheets. The highest quality, incredible craftsmanship with just unmatched softness. 100% traceable organic cotton. It gets softer with every wash. I tell you guys that it's true. I can tell you it's a big difference. And I have bought different pairs of sheets to try to find some best. I keep coming back to my Boll & Branch sheets. They're incredible. They're buttery to the touch, super breathable. They're perfect for cooler weather and warmer weather. Why the drape? You actually feel like you've got something of substance on you so you can snuggle in, but you don't get overwhelmingly hot during the summertime, and it's just the perfect weight under the blanket as well during the wintertime. I love Boll & Branch sheets. They're so luxurious. They're loved by four U.S. presidents. Got over 10,000 raving reviews. Right now, get 15% off your first order when you use promo code ERIC, E-R-I-C-K, at BollandBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com. The promo code is ERIC, E-R-I-C-K. Exclusions apply. See site for details. Hello, welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. To the phones we go. Joe, you're up next. Welcome.
Hey, Eric. I'm wondering why nobody's talking about Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, putting troops and barbed wire on the border and stopping immigrants, but yet the White House is claiming that Title 42 was repealed and big numbers of immigrants are no longer coming across. Is there anything...
That was my point earlier. I mean, that's Mayorkas is trying to take credit for only 500 people coming across, but it was the Texas National Guard that went down there, strung a lot of barbed wire, and has physically, I mean, they've been caught on film, physically blocking people from climbing up the bluff. Yes.
Yeah. And now they're extending it left and right.
Yes.
Yeah, they're pushing the wire farther left and right and saying, hey, this is working amazingly.
Right. Surprise. And the Biden administration, of course, says, well, we only had 500. We were expecting a surge, and it didn't turn out. Turns out our policies are working. Well, if your policies are Texas soldiers on the border with barbed wire, yes, but those aren't your policies, Mr. President. The great point, Joe. I mean, they were caught on, if y'all haven't seen the video, it was on Fox the other day. I think it was Bill Malugan's film. The Texas National Guard guys literally are blocking the paths of immigrants illegal aliens who are trying to climb up the bluff out of the Rio Grande, and they can't get up because the Texas National Guard is there standing there looking at them saying, you can't come. And they can't get up. So surprise, of course that's happening. Good for them for doing that. By the way, there is some news on the presidential front you should know. Tim Scott is expanding his operation. He's brought in Bill Haslam. Bill Haslam has been governor of Tennessee. And he looks like he's got Michael Johnson, the South Carolina businessman, will be a finance chair. Zach Moffitt from Targeted Victory is going to have a campaign role. Haslam had been the Republican Governors Association chairman from 2017 to 18. Tim Scott is going to make a run of this. Now, there are a lot of people, particularly DeSantis supporters, who are very dismissive of Tim Scott, who say, well, I mean, he might get third place. I wouldn't be as dismissive of Tim Scott as some people are. He is a real happy warrior. He's a very nice guy. And there is a level of loyalty to Tim Scott. Scott, Haley, and DeSantis and Pence actually all have very loyal staff. Scott's strategy is he wants to run as the happy warrior with the opportunity message and not be the angry iconoclast, but the guy who says America can work for all of us. Whether that message can penetrate, I don't know, but he's going to make his announcement, formal announcement, May 22nd in North Charleston. He has his exploratory committee out. I'm looking forward to seeing him formally in the race as a candidate. I genuinely got a soft spot for Tim Scott. I like the guy tremendously. I always have. He's going to be at the conference. He's going to be at the gathering in August. Y'all can come hear him. He's just a profoundly good dude. Win or lose, he kind of has the message that I think we should want the candidates on the GOP to have. It's a very pro America message, a very upbeat message, and I think he would be an asset in the field. And I mean, I know there are those dismissively saying, well, he's really running for vice president. Listen, I think he should give him all for a run for his money with a very upbeat, happy warrior message. So God bless him. And Bill Haslam, of course, was a well-liked, highly thought of governor of Tennessee. And he's got a lot of fundraising connections that can help Scott raise money. It's just going to be interesting to see Scott and Haley fighting over South Carolina. That in and of itself will be an interesting fight to watch. Now, we got to move on. We got to talk to you about mercenaries when we come back. I'll give you a little bit of history lesson on what's going on in Ukraine. It's actually kind of funny. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. I want to take you through a history lesson, and I may not get it all. It's been a long time since I studied, and I have to reread and refresh my mind. Let's begin with the table knife, shall we? Do you know where the table knife comes from? The table knife comes from Cardinal Richelieu. Cardinal Richelieu was the advisor to Louis XIII in France. Richelieu was very, very powerful, and Richelieu kind of invented the nation state. So essentially, France was a feudal kingdom where you had lots of dukes who had their own armies, and Richelieu didn't like it because you had a king of France, but all these dukes with their own standing armies and bases of power could always rival the king. And Richelieu, over time, set about undermining that and consolidating power behind the king, making the dukes give up their armies and give them to the king, and the king oversaw them and professionalized the force over time, whittling down mercenaries in favor of a professional force. Now, this was not an idea that was very popular in a lot of places, in large part because of Machiavelli. Over in Florence, Machiavelli had convinced the local government to not hire mercenaries and instead use locals and an army because, being patriots, they would fight for their homeland, and it was a disaster. The mercenaries won. Machiavelli wrote to the prince to try to get in power, get back in good graces with the winners of the war, having used the patriots. But over time, Richelieu, among others, saw this as a good idea. You essentially get patriots involved, you train them up, you make a professionalized force They swear allegiance to the leader, or leader swear allegiance to the country, and they can outpace the mercenaries, because what sets the mercenaries apart and makes the mercenaries so great is they do it for a living. The mercenaries do it for a living. Therefore, the mercenary armies can be very good armies, very capable armies, compared to the professional armies. Richelieu wanted to start professionalizing the French army and consolidate it under the king. Now this gets back to the table knife. He would have meetings with people. They would come in and they would use their broad knives, and he didn't like their table manners. And so Richelieu insisted that all the knives have the ends rounded and the blades dulled to make them have to sit there and cut their meat in a civilized, refined way. He was kind of an interesting guy. Richelieu died before the end of the 30 Years' War. The 30 Years' War was like World War I and II for medieval Europe. In fact, people kind of begin the idea of the modern world after the 30 Years' War was resolved. You had a Catholic king in the Holy Roman Empire deposed. And so Emperor Ferdinand II was deposed by Frederick V, who was Protestant. There was a big war over it. It drew in the Dutch Republic. It drew in the Spanish. It drew in the French. It drew in the Swedes. England kind of set this one out. It was a central continental war in Europe, and it lasted for 30 years. The Dutch and the Spanish were already fighting each other over Protestant versus Catholic control of the Netherlands in an 80 years war. They all kind of came to a head, and they wound up being satisfied with the Peace of Westphalia. And we set the modern nation state to the Peace of Westphalia, because after that, France kind of becomes a real nation state. Richelieu started it. Louis XIV kind of locked it in place. The German states, Prussia becomes a thing, Austro-Hungarian Empire becomes a thing, Britain is Britain, Spain is Spain. And so nation states, instead of feudal kingdoms with rival lords, become a big thing. The Holy Roman Empire begins to fade, and there's natural consolidation. And among those things that happens is the Machiavellian Richelieu idea of the professional soldier standing army, where the countries of Europe keep standing armies and they don't rely on mercenaries anymore. And the mercenaries begin to go away. Napoleon, once he takes over France, really locks in the professional soldier army. The United States had become a country in the late 1700s. And even then, when the U.S. makes its first engagement abroad in Tripoli, in Libya, with the Barbary States, we relied on a contingent of Marines overseeing a bunch of mercenaries. And we began to get rid of it as well. Well, fast forward to the 21st century. Mercenaries start to play a role again. The fall of the Soviet Union saw a lot of wealthy troops from the Soviet Union who knew how to fight go off to third world countries and become arms dealers and mercenaries for a lot of third world rogue regimes. And as Vladimir Putin took over in Russia, Vladimir Putin allowed the mercenaries to come home and used the mercenaries instead of the professional armies in sticky situations. In Syria, for example, the Russians are not technically at war in Syria, siding with Bashar al-Assad. Instead, the Russians are sending the Russians as mercenaries under the Wagner Group. It looks like it's Wagner, but it's pronounced Wagner, and they've gone to Syria. Well, the Wagner Group is also in Ukraine, and this is where I ultimately want to go. The reason Machiavelli said you should use patriots, even though it didn't work out for Machiavelli, the reason you should use patriots and you should use citizens is because you got a more loyal army, loyal to the government. With the mercenaries were ultimately always an employee of someone. And if the money stopped rolling in, the mercenaries could turn on you. Your citizens from your nation state would not. It's what Machiavelli got. It's what Richelieu got. It's what the European armies and Napoleon got after the Peace of Westphalia. And it's what Vladimir Putin has forgotten. And the story is priceless. Yevgeny Prigozhin is the head of the Wagner Group. He's a hired hand, a supposed loyal lieutenant to Vladimir Putin, and things are not going well for the Russians in Bakhmut. Bakhmut is a Ukrainian city. The Ukrainians have decided to take it back. They have been bombarding the Russian positions. But Wagner mercenaries are the ones controlling the city. There has now been a leak. Turns out, Yevgeny Prigozhin made Ukraine an offer. He's a mercenary. He's the head of the Wagner Group. They are for pay with the Russians. He has been openly angry about the Russian military situation, the poor training of the recruits from Russia. And Prigozhin said that if Ukraine's commanders would withdraw their soldiers from around Bakhmut, he would give Kyiv information on where the Russian troop positions were, so Ukraine could attack the Russian professional army instead of killing Wagner's paid mercenaries. He conveyed the proposal to his contacts in Ukraine's military intelligence directorate, with whom he's maintained secret communications throughout the course of the war. Prigozhin has feuded with military commanders in Russia, who he furiously claims have failed to equip and resupply his forces, which had provided vital support for Moscow. He's an ally of Vladimir Putin, who regards Prigozhin as one of his most loyal lieutenants and might see this as a betrayal, which is why the American government has chosen to leak this information. The Ukrainians, by the way, are confirming the story. One official said Prigozhin extended the offer regarding Bakhmut more than once. Kyiv rejected it because they didn't trust him and thought his proposal could have been disingenuous. A U.S. official cautioned there are similar doubts in Washington about the intentions. The Ukrainian and U.S. officials spoke on conditions of anonymity. However, Prigozhin is known to be frustrated with the fighting in Bakhmut. They put the Wagner mercenaries at the front lines, and they put the Russians in ancillary positions. And it does appear that the Wagner commanders were trying to negotiate with the Ukrainians that if you stop killing our mercenaries, we'll give you the coordinates of the Russians, go bomb them, and you can take over the city, and we'll just go home. It does turn out that Prigozhin has complained publicly and privately the Russians are not giving his mercenaries weapons, that he is expected to buy the weapons and the munitions himself, that they're redirecting the munitions elsewhere, and in fact, they're in danger of an ammunition shortage, just like the Ukrainians are because of the Americans. Now, I bring all of this up because you should never trust the mercenaries. Never trust the mercenaries. But Putin has to trust the mercenaries because Putin has played his hand so badly here. This is why, if you're wondering why there's a bipartisan good faith effort to get the Ukrainians as many weapons as possible, as quickly as possible, this is why. Now, I know there are people on the right who are convinced that somehow our soldiers are going to go to Ukraine and that we shouldn't be spending money on Ukraine. I understand there are people, including some of you, who think that. But if you want to kind of understand why, this is it. Because we know enough about the Russian situation that as much as we have are increasingly concerned about weapon shortages, the Russians really are concerned. The Chinese and the Iranians are helping the Russians. But they're not sending bullets and ammo in large part because of incompatibility issues. We're surrounding them. We have them in positions where we could wipe out the Russians. And it's not us doing the killing. It's the Ukrainians. We're staying out of it. We're providing the weapons. We're not providing the manpower. The Ukrainians are fighting to save their homeland. And this war is not going well for the Russians. If we can weaken the Russian position and they have to withdraw from Ukraine, it undermines the Russian-Chinese alliance. At the same time, as the Ukrainians buy weapons from us, it provides jobs for us. You know all the money we're supposedly sending to Ukraine? well over half of those billions of dollars come back to the United States in the form of arm purchases to places like Alabama, where they build weapon systems. It's actually a really good financial position for us. It makes us the arsenal of democracy like we were in World War II, without us committing our soldiers. And now we know from the leaks of intelligence that the Wagner mercenaries are kind of getting tired of Vladimir Putin's BS, and they're really tired of the military BS. This leak is deeply destabilizing to the Russians because it shows that the Wagner chief, if this isn't a ploy, if this is legit, he's undermining the Russian military operations. And that sows even further discord between the Russians and their mercenaries. And that for us is a very good thing. And we should hope for more of this, not less of this. And it's another reason we should continue to support the Ukrainians, because not us, them. They're the ones fighting, the Russians. And the Russians are not our friends. And all of us should understand Vladimir Putin and the Russians are not our friends. And anything we can do to weaken them is good for us. Something else that's good for you is getting Vision Computer to take over your computer needs. If you've got an IT department and you're struggling, or you can't afford an IT department, but you need computers for your office, you don't want to just outsource everything, let Vision Computer help you, because they can be your partner. They can be your IT department. And when your employees call, they answer the phone in about 15 seconds. If you go to visioncomputers.com, you can check them out, but you got to call them at 404-COMPUTE to ask about the Eric Erickson special. They will work with you on an incredible computer deal. More than that, if you need a computer for your kid, like I need a computer, I'm building one with Vision. This is how this whole deal worked out. Is I want my kid, he wants a gaming PC. He's wanted one for years. I'm finally at the point where he's also doing computer programming. I'm like, all right, we'll do it. I know nothing about him, but I know Vision Computer does. And Vision Computer can not only help him get set up, but they can be his tech support. So I don't have to be the computer fixer for once in the family. Vision does that, and they actually answer the phone. Call them at 404-COMPUTE. Let them custom build a PC for you. They ask you what you need. They ask you what you want. They build you one that's going to last you for a while. They give you their award-winning support. They pick up the phone when you call them. They call you back if they can't. And the best part is, many cases, they can just remote in to help you with your computer situation, so you don't have to take your computer to them. 404-COMPUTE or visioncomputers.com. If you call them, ask about the Eric Erickson special. Welcome. Ron DeSantis has signed legislation to defund DEI programs at Florida's colleges, and goodness gracious, the left is squealing like a stuck pig. Boy, do they hate it. Goodness gracious. Good for him, though, putting points on the board. You know, Politico has a story about Kamala Harris. This is the headline. Will Kamala Harris harm Joe Biden's reelection chances? History suggests targeting the vice president won't work, but this time might be different. This is Jeff Greenfield. And the basic point is that polling, even among Democrats, shows there's real concern about Joe Biden's age. Real concern. And the result is that more and more people are thinking about his nomination and about his running mate. In fact, in the 1950s, the Democrats attacked Dwight Eisenhower over Richard Nixon and nearly beat Nixon. It was their concerted effort. And when Nixon had Spiro Agnew, the Democrats attacked Spiro Agnew. Now, it wasn't successful. I mean, obviously Eisenhower won, Nixon won. But the problem here is that Kamala Harris is the least liked politician in America right now. I mean, Kamala Harris polls worse than cancer and COVID. It's a problem. Kamala Harris's popularity is not good. And every time she opens her mouth, she says something stupid. And even her staff complains about the amount of things that she says. She's just not very good on the campaign trail with all of her inspired lines.
And now, Deep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
With each day, renew our commitment to the urgency of now and the ability that we have collectively, all of us in it together, to do something about it.
That was Deep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I mean, she just says profound garbage. And Joe Biden is over 80 years old, oldest man alive to be president of the United States. I remember reading about when Ronald Reagan ran and people made a big deal about his age. In 1984, I guess he was in his late 60s, early 70s, and he had to use humor and jokes to talk about how back at the signing of the Declaration of Independence, he was in the room and stuff like that. And Thomas Jefferson was a friend of mine, and the public ate it up, and he delivered the lines way better than Joe Biden does. And also, George H.W. Bush was perceived by the public as being a highly competent successor in office, so much so that he won in 1988. Kamala Harris is not. Now, I don't think that will be the bulk of the GOP attacks against Joe Biden, but there will certainly be ancillary attacks against Kamala Harris. But with the economy headed to recession, and by the way, earnings reports make it look like the recession is already here, you're going to have an economic issue to go against Joe Biden. You're going to have an age issue to go against Joe Biden. You're going to have a competency issue to go against Joe Biden. And you're going to have a Kamala Harris issue to go against Joe Biden. Cackles can't perform well on stage. She cackles whenever she gets feels a little awkward. It's kind of her tell. The Biden team doesn't know how to combat it because they can't get rid of her, because if they did, they would be eaten alive by the wokes. It's hilarious to watch.